Ladies and gentlemen, good day, and welcome to the Agrotech Foods Q1 FY20 earnings conference call hosted by Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal the operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Vaishnavi Mandhaniya from Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. I welcome everyone to Agrotech Foods Limited's Q1 FY20 earnings conference call. From the management, we have Mr. Sachin Gopal, the Managing Director, and Mr. Arijit Datta, the CFO. We shall begin the call with a brief on the quarter results, and post that, we shall have a Q&A session. I shall now hand over the call to Mr. Sachin.
Thank you. Thank you, Vaishnavi, and good afternoon, everybody. We also have with us Poorna Srinivas Kerala, our incoming CFO. Okay. Overall, for the quarter, as you would have seen the results and also our release, we had broad-based growth on the foods business across the three categories of ready-to-cook snacks, ready-to-eat snacks, and spreads of about 14-odd%, which were up to about 56 crores, more or less offsetting lower sales of Sundrop edible oils and Crystal edible oils for the quarter. In terms of the businesses, ready-to-cook snacks delivered a value growth of about 12%. Now, as you would have seen from our release, the volume growth was 6%. So the difference between the 6 and the 12 is largely due to the fact that the more premium ends of the ready-to-cook snacks business did better, right? So when we say premium, it includes microwave popcorn also, but it also includes other ends of the higher-priced ends of instant popcorn. This is a good figure, I think, and I think it seems to indicate that we are now getting back into a double-digit growth on ready-to-cook, right? Some of it is due to also the fact that we've launched a very intensive in-store demonstration program starting actually towards end January. So it happened around February, March, and with a significant impact of April, May, June. Whenever you do in-store demonstration, it has some amount of human effort involved and therefore potentially can have some amount of pipelining. However, we think that will only be a part of it, a smaller part of it. So probably a double-digit, 10%, thereabout figure, I think, is realistic, even if we assume that there is some amount of pipelining built into this 12%. Probably it'll be 100 or 200 basis points. It's difficult to call the exact figure because that level of detail we won't have in terms of retail stocks, but broadly, that's the management assessment. So we're into a double-digit kind of range. As we have said earlier, and we've informed you that we will be working both to increase the rate of growth of ready-to-cook popcorn, which is now demonstrated, but we will also be beefing up the portfolio. And that is why, if you would have noticed in the investor release, we mentioned that we have started commercial production, but shipments have yet to start in terms of this quarter. I mean, it will happen in this current quarter of Act 2 Sweet Corn. Now, which will also start getting included over time in the ready-to-cook portfolio. Why was this done? This was done basically because we see the ready-to-cook portfolio over time expanding into much more than just popcorn, right? Today, it is popcorn. Yesterday, it was popcorn. Today and tomorrow, it will be popcorn and sweet corn. And let's see how time goes by. Because ready-to-cook is a very nice portfolio. It's a very tough portfolio to build, right? Because it resembles more of a grocery as compared to a snacks profile in terms of transportation, supply chain, customer acquisition. But it's also a very nice portfolio to have from a margin and long-term consumer loyalty perspective. We made our first expansion, therefore, in this segment outside of popcorn into sweet corn. The reason we chose sweet corn is that we believe we have a significant competitive advantage in the sweet corn category for a number of reasons. One is that we first have a brand. We have Act 2, and Act 2 is very synonymous per se with popcorn, sweet corn. In fact, in many of our vending locations, you will find that we are selling popcorn also, but we are also selling sweet corn, right? So from a brand perspective, we have the capability. The second is even from a supply side capability, we have competitive advantage. It's being manufactured in Gujarat, which is not so far away from the quality sweet corn production of the country, right? So we have locational advantage. We also, since we are in Gujarat, we have some energy cost advantages, because it is energy intensive. And the third is very critical is we know how to build these categories. We've done it before in instant popcorn, in microwave popcorn. We know what it takes, what exactly is the business model, how do we get consumers, et cetera, et cetera. So when you take all of these three things into account, we have the brand, we have competitive advantage in terms of sourcing and manufacturing of the product, and we have a business model knowledge of how to build the category, we think we are in a strong position. We don't have really any data on how large the category is, because as you know, we don't buy Nielsen. But you can actually, the only other full-fledged branded player in sweet corn today is a company called Tata. So if you go into MCA, you can get their details, right? But they basically compete in larger packs and more from a grocery perspective. However, our estimate is, wherever we do these out-of-home locations of popcorn and sweet corn, our estimate is that the category, not today, but can be about as large as 50% of the popcorn business. So in other words, we have a 125-130 crore or thereabouts figure as far as ready-to-cook popcorn is concerned. We think it can be 50-odd% of that, right? Obviously, time will tell, but we are starting. So you can expect to start seeing it over this quarter in different markets. And when we give you the quarter 2 update, we will share the progress on that front. In terms of ready-to-eat snacks, this basically comprises today ready-to-eat popcorn. It includes extruded snacks, it includes nacho chips, and it includes some amount of sun-drop Indian snacks like peanuts and chickpeas and peas. In this, we saw strong growth in ready-to-eat popcorn, which we've given the figures in the release of about 69%, extruded snacks about 97%. But naturals, which is toddy chips, were actually lower. As you know, post the fire at Unnao, we had moved to a third party. We've had some challenges in terms of its, meaning we've maintained supply to the market, but we had some quality issues that we had to resolve. We are in the process of resolving them, but we need to just be careful because, we've maintained our market supply post the fire incident, but we need to basically get as quickly as we can back to our own in-plant production. That will start first with the Chittoor plant when that becomes operational, and subsequently Unnao also later in the year will become operational. But other than that, business doing well and everything cruising along. In terms of the spread business, which is basically peanut butter revenues were up about 13% in the quarter, with the business continuing to demonstrate steady growth. This is reasonably similar to the growth rate trajectories that we had for quarter four. It means that I think we are in a good position. I talked some about it later, that we have seen some competitive threat during the back half of last year. And, I think we've been able to get right on top of that. And I would say we will continue to work. We are in the process of diversifying this portfolio even further, the spread portfolio. So you can expect to see some more news about it as we come into the next quarter. Probably in the quarter 2 call, we will update you. By then, we would have introduced some more new products, expanding our presence in the total spreads category. Right? I expect that in the next 12 months, we would have taken a position that we probably have the strongest portfolio in the spreads category in the country. And I'm including all spreads in terms of shelf-stable spreads. So jams, honey, peanut, nut-based spreads, chocolate spreads, you will see our presence will be fairly significant in that. And that should ensure that we have a good trajectory in terms of growth rate. The other information that we've already provided in the release is that, as you know, we have stopped production of sun-drop cereal snacks, stroke breakfast cereals, but depending on whichever way you want to call it, post the Unnao fire. That we have restarted now out of the Hyderabad plant, and we've already started shipping and invoicing customers. So again, you will see that being rolled out as we go along. So in sum, therefore, I would say a good performance on ready-to-cook snacks, bag snacks. a little softer than we would have liked it to be, right? Largely because of the supply side issues, which as we resolve, we will it will restore back. And I would say a good performance on spreads and the right base in terms of ensuring that we get back to about a 20-25% growth rate on the category. In terms of the Sundrop edible oils, we had mentioned to you in the last call that starting this call, we will start to report gross margin, because for the last 8 quarters, that's been very difficult to do because of non-comparability of figures. So starting this quarter, we are reporting it again. As you would have seen, we have mentioned that in terms of Sundrop oils, and consistent with what also we had mentioned we were doing last quarter, we've taken some actions to ensure that, you know, there is sustainability of gross margin for the edible oil portfolio. And as a consequence, gross margin for the business, for the Sundrop edible oil business, was up 4% over the prior year. Crystal edible oils value reflect the impact of, you know, continued volatility. It is a commodity and it tends to go up and down depending on market behavior. So there's not really much to read or report into that. It could be up one quarter, down the next, and, you know, it does have variations, like any commodity business. So coming therefore to the financial highlights, overall net sales for quarter one are more or less in line with prior year, reflecting a very volume-driven growth of about 14% in the foods business, which offsets lower revenues in both Sundrop and Crystal Edible Oils. Gross margin for the quarter was 9% up in higher in absolute terms, right, in rupee terms, and that translates into close to 200 basis points. I think the exact figure is about 180 basis points. A&P for the quarter, we made more margin, and we are also committed that, you know, as we make more margin, we are able to flow it through to profit, but we also need to be able to invest behind our businesses. So you can see therefore that A&P for the quarter was actually up by about 2 crores versus last year. And this also is consistent with our plan that as we continue to see margin improvements, we are able to handle effectively all three components in terms of where this margin flows, which are really advertising and promotion, SG&A, and profit before tax. Employee benefits at 10 crores were lower than prior year by about 50 odd lakhs. This is really due to more accounting of some ESOP charges. Otherwise, I would say you can read that employee costs are more or less in line with prior year. Depreciation and amortization includes an amount of about 67 lakhs on account of first-time adoption of the Ind AS 116 leases during the quarter due to amortization on right-of-use lease assets. You would be seeing this across all companies, right? There is a little inflation in everybody's EBITDA as a consequence of this change, right? However, total depreciation charge for the quarter was only about 4.55 crore because this reflects the fact that there was no charge on account of the Unnao facility, because that charge will come in only when we restart that facility, which will be sometime later in this year. Other income includes the impact of about 1.04 crores in terms of income from investment in mutual funds, and the profit before tax as a consequence was up 4% and profit tax after tax up about 8%. I think that covers off most of the points that we felt were necessary to brief you on. Arijit, Shinu, is there anything else that, No? Okay. So, Vaishnavi, I think that's it from our side. We're happy to take questions now.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Anuj Gupta from Perfect Research. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. I've got a few questions. I'll club them together. Question number one. Could you please share the revenue breakup and distribution reach and number of stores for branded food business, namely Ready to Cook and Eat Popcorn, Peanut Butter, and Nachos to address estimates as we don't buy Nielsen data? Question number two. In the current scenario, we have seen an increase in the power of retailers by them launching private label brands and challenging the established brands like Kraft Heinz. What impact are we seeing in India for our segments? Question number three. What is the percentage contribution in sales from modern trade sales for each product segment? What are the plans for upcoming new products launches of nut-based chocolates and nut-based peanut butter? Sorry, nut-based butter. Are there any more product or category that that you have thought of entering? How is the competition being faced from brands like Pintola, Alpino, and others who are even charging a premium and providing healthy options for the same? And lastly, how do you plan to spend on advertisement expenses as it has been low for a long time? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Anuj. So, and thank you for asking comprehensively everything. So, I won't be able to give you any information as far as Nielsen is concerned because we don't subscribe to Nielsen. All right. Okay. So, we do give you a breakup on an annualized basis in terms of where the total food business ended. Right. So you'll have that in terms of the last call. And these growth figures is what we will be focusing on to give you an indication, right? Because we, as you know, we've been tracking at about 15-odd%, right? And our goal is to get to that 20-25% growth rate. At that level, we think we'll be in the right ballpark as far as the required run rate that we need to be able to have a significant improvement in overall profitability, okay? In terms of power of retailers, that's a good question. I think retailers, and we've, you know, there's obviously been a lot in the news about it. We've been seeing this for some time, right, in terms of private label. And private label is very difficult. It's extremely difficult in India. It is so in other parts of the world also, but particularly so in India. And there is a reason for that. The primary reason for private label to do well in many markets in Western Europe and North America and the UK has been that manufacturer margins were very, very high, right? So if you look at manufacturer margins in the US, you are looking at, you know, 40, 50, 60%, right, in terms of gross margin. So what happens is that leaves you very vulnerable in terms of a possibility that a private label can come in. We offer the consumer much better value to, from his or her own label, and therefore, you know, you lose share. What's happened in India, and it's happened across categories, and it's certainly true for us. So I'll give you one example. Ready-to-eat popcorn. We sell a pack of ready-to-eat popcorn of 50 grams for about 20 rupees. We had one customer who launched a similar pack for 28 rupees. Doesn't fly, right? They can make all the effort, they can fill up the shelves as much as they like, but at the end of the day, if they don't have the capability to come in at least somewhat 15 to 20% lower than us, they won't be able to make it work, right? In fact, they actually damage category growth in doing so. So yes, I think the threat of private label is always there, but so long as we operate a very low-cost manufacturing structure, we keep a good margin for ourselves, but provide good value to consumers, we don't see that the threat of private label is actually is going to have a meaningful impact on our business. It'll come, it'll go, everybody will give it a shot. Naturally, every retailer wants to try private label because he or she believes that they can make more money there. But by the time you end up with all the supply chain costs, all the damage and leakages, all the write-offs that you have to do, all the buy one, get one promotions, actually there's not much money left for the retailer. They're better off working with us. Okay, so that's kind of where our head is and our strategy is, and you don't have to take our word for it. You can go into the customer stores and you can have a look at the product and you'll understand what we're trying to say, right? It's also very difficult. It sounds nice for somebody to say, you know what, I can just go on and have it made. Yes, you can, but all the IPR that a FMCG company actually puts into making it, that's very difficult to replicate. So take a product like our Caramel Bliss, Act 2 Caramel Bliss, right? It's a lot of effort and R&D and work that goes into making it. It is really not that easy to do it. Yeah. Okay? So I would say that would be my answer to that. In terms of contribution, percentage contribution of modern trade, you can assume it's about 12%-15%, right? Okay, so that's kind of the range that we operate with. We don't want modern trade to have too much of a share for us, right? We want a fair share because, you know, customers do go to modern trade and, you know, touch and feel and experiment. No doubt about that. But we would not like to have a dominant share coming from any single customer, which is why, you know, we've invested over time. We spend about 50 odd crores a year on our sales organization to be able to handle about 400,000 stores, because we want to keep that leverage with us. Rather than with any customer being able to, you know, have a disproportionate contribution to our business, and therefore being, you know, force us to do things that we would not like to do. In terms of new products, I think, thank you for asking that question. If you recall, and you can go into our website, last November we had indicated that we would be launching a number of products, right? Within that, we already concluded the cereals part of it, which is there with Pops, but there will be a couple of other entries in the cereal category, but not immediately, i.e. in the next one or two quarters. Sweet corn is an adjacency that we mentioned then. We said that we would look at one more ready-to-cook adjacency. So that is launched now, and we'll now, you know, concentrate on how to scale it up without distracting from the effort of growing our current businesses. In addition to this, in the spreads category, we anticipate ourselves in the next few months going into a full range of nut butters. So nut butters defined as things like almond butter, cashew butter, so on and so forth. We see, however, these as being a little more niche, right? Because price points are likely to be high, and therefore they will not be so big. But the big entry in terms of the spread category will be our entry into chocolate-based spreads, right? So as we mentioned to you, we've been working, and now we have installed capacities actually for chocolate and chocolate products, all in our in-house facility in Jhagadia. And you can expect, therefore, that within this quarter, in the next few months, certainly by the time we have our next call in October, we should be able to give you news on that. And that leaves only the last other part that we had mentioned in our November analyst meet, which is chocolates. We had said then that we would be getting into nut-based chocolates, and we are absolutely on track for that. And you can, once again, as I say, you can expect to see in the next 2-4 months that we will be entering this category. We have a very clear task as far as chocolates is concerned. We don't believe that we can match the spending of any of these players like Cadbury's or Nestle or Mars, because they're also spending significant amount of money, and in many cases the companies are actually making losses, right? So we need to enter with a differentiated proposition, and I'm not sure whether we mentioned it, but if we haven't in the past, I'll reinforce that our entry into chocolates will be through the area of nut-based chocolates, right? So nut-based chocolates could be peanut butter, it could be almond, it could be cashew, right? But that will be the core. We are not going to attempt in the near future to enter into chocolate as we traditionally know it, like the Cadbury's Dairy Milk chocolate or something like that, right? So we would be entering into combinations, if you will, of chocolate with something, chocolate with something else, etc., etc. And in the next few months, as it plays out, I think you'll see it, and then we can talk more about it. I would say for now, these are the new products that we would like to talk about. Innovation is a continuous process. There's many other things in the pipeline, but these are the ones that we committed to when we told you last year, when we met you last year. I see ourselves putting a tick against all of them as we close the 12-month period. In other words, we would have, you know, put in whatever we had said we'd do. And in November, when we meet again, we will share with you our thoughts on what else we will do. But quite honestly, with a foods portfolio, which includes ready-to-cook snacks, ready-to-eat snacks, spreads, breakfast cereals, and chocolates, we think we have a good enough portfolio within this to, you know, cross that 500 crore mark, honestly. We don't really, I think, need too much else to be able to get there. We just need to be able to roll these products out within our current coverage universe of about 400,000 stores, do a good job, acquire new customers, get them through trial, in some cases through media, through display, through promotion. This is sufficient to get us there. In our mind, there is absolutely no doubt. But we need to work on innovation, because the category that we are entering today is stuff that we started work in 2014, 2015. It takes a long time actually to bring things to fruition. And we will be working therefore on other new products as well. These could be either locally developed or also could be, taken from the Conagra portfolio. So yesterday, for example, at the annual general meeting, a similar question was asked by shareholders. And we mentioned in the meeting, we said, we are in discussions. If there's something from Conagra that, makes a lot of sense for us, we will absolutely obviously do it because we will leverage it. So one example that we gave, that doesn't mean we're doing it, I'm just giving it as an example of conversation, is that, as you know, Conagra bought a company called Pinnacle some time ago. And Pinnacle in turn had bought a company called Guardian Foods, which is a Canadian company, I think based in near Vancouver in Canada. And, they make plant-based foods. You must have all read about the Beyond Meat IPO. But Guardian is actually, I believe the products are, absolutely in the same league. So it's possible that, we say, hey, oh, by the way, this is there in the parent company's portfolio. We think it can make sense. We think plant nutrition is going to be a big deal in India in the next 10 years. And so it's possible that we'll work on those. But those are slightly more longer term, right? For now, I think our new portfolio, as we talked about, ready-to-cook snacks, ready-to-eat snacks, spreads, including both nut-based and chocolate spreads, breakfast cereals and chocolate confectionery, I think is more than adequate to meet our needs. We are going to actually struggle to be able to handle this large portfolio in the short term. So, yeah. In terms of, products like Pintola, they're there. They're there on the net. And they're also, I would say, strong in some geographies. So in a place like Ahmedabad, for example, if you go, you'll see, a lot of Pintola being consumed in gyms and things like that. But they're very expensive, right? So they struggle to actually get mass traction. So they'll be there. You'll see them on the net. You'll see them sometimes in gyms. But they will struggle to be mass-based. We've seen a number of these players come out of Gujarat. There's been one new brand coming out every quarter from Gujarat because a lot of people make peanut butter in Gujarat. It's exported, right, to many countries, including Australia. But these are not large-scale, sustainable, scalable businesses, right? So we shouldn't get too distracted. We should be cognizant of them. But we shouldn't get distracted because we want to build 50-100 crore businesses, right? And for that, we need to have scale in manufacturing, we need to have good volumes, and we need to be able to give products to consumers at affordable prices while making a good margin for ourselves, okay? And last is on A&P expenses. I think this quarter is evident of what we've always said, that and as and when, depending on how the margin is going, we obviously need to prioritize and, A&P and profitability clearly have to be very, very critical. But it is not that we will spend on advertising at the expense of profitability. We just need to find the right balance between the two, right? We are committed to building a sustainable, profitable business. Okay? So thank you. It was a long list of questions and I hope that I was able to do justice to them.
Sir, I'm sorry, I could not get the answer to the first question of the distribution reach and the revenue breakup for the brands.
Yeah, Anuj, I said there is no new information that we have on distribution reach. That's what I mentioned. You didn't get it because I didn't say it. There is nothing there. We don't buy Nielsen, right? So whatever was our distribution reach, you can assume at the end of quarter four, and I think we've mentioned it there, that will be, broadly speaking, what will be the distribution figures today. Okay, there's no material change. Our largest distributed product is instant popcorn, which will be available, I think, in somewhere between 250 to 300,000 stores. And the others are likely to be in the sub 100,000. Microwave is probably going to be the smallest, about 25,000, 30,000. Tortilla chips will be larger. Peanut butter will be a little under 100,000, I guess. But we don't actually have data to be able to share with you per Nielsen. Once a year, we do update you with all the figures, which we'll do this year also. Okay? And revenue breakup, as I said, we do share with you at the end of the year the total. So if you go into the last year's call, you'll see what the total was. There's a full breakup is there. right? I think I've mentioned it. But here we are giving you the percentage breakup. So I think that's good enough because it tells you how our foods business is going to track, how it is tracking, how the individual growth pieces are, right? Which is, I think we feel is, you know, quite adequate from an investment standpoint, okay? We also need to manage competitive activity. Okay, thanks, Anuja. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
We will go to the next question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vimal Sampat, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon, Vimal.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the growth in this ready-to-cook category. So do you think for this next year it is sustainable at 10-12%?
Okay. Anything else, Vimal?
Yeah. Other thing is, nachos, we have seen a drop of 10%. And bad snacks, this other excluded products is grown at 97%. So can you throw more light on these two?
Okay. Anything else, Vimal?
No, but that's all.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so that's an important question. I think, you know, what you asked for about ready to cook popcorn, is it sustainable? I think that's why I gave the qualifier early in the call, right? I'm saying that part of the growth we've seen, and it started last year actually, that with people consuming more movies like Netflix, Amazon Prime, right? We are seeing actually a resurgence in ready to cook popcorn across the world. Okay, so it's not like, you know, we ourselves were struggling with, you know, mid to say high single digit growth last year, right? But we saw this impact, right? So clearly if people are watching a movie on Netflix, you know, popcorn is a product of choice, and as that increases, that will certainly give some natural momentum. However, as I mentioned, starting late January, we started a lot of in-store activities behind it. Now, what happens when you do in-store activities, let's say on microwave popcorn, it also drives availability in the channel, right? Because you tell the retailer, oh, by the way, now try microwave popcorn because I'm going to do a demo in your store. So you sell them 3-4 varieties. Because you sell them 3-4 varieties, you also invoice the distributor. So the distributor's range availability increases, right? So there's a little part of it which is actually also driven by pipelining, right? We can't give you an exact estimate because much of this inventory is also lying in retail stores, right? Which we don't have such a good capability to track. Our best management estimate is that some part of this difference between volume and value growth of about 600 basis points, the difference is coming about due to pipelining. Our best estimate is in the region of about 150 to 200 basis points. We don't think it's going to be more than that. In other words, our best estimate as of now is that we are certainly back into double-digit growth. Okay, whether it is 12 or 15%, it's something honestly at the end of quarter two only we'll be able to give you a better feel on it. Okay, so double-digit looks like it's on, but apply a little bit of judgment on the 12. Okay, in terms of nachos and extruded snacks. See, nachos is clearly, you know, as I mentioned, due to supply chain issues. Extruded snacks is going partly because of base. Last year's opening base was actually very, very low. We had been doing some tweaks and we had launched a product called Juicy Puffs subsequent to the first quarter. So I think the bases will change as we go across the year. We feel from a bad snacks category that we are getting close to mastery of it. I don't think we have mastery. I think we now today have mastery in ready-to-eat popcorn, right? And the reason why I say we have mastery in that is that we are available at all price points. There were a large number of threats to us in the ready-to-eat popcorn category. There always will be because, you know, people will start, they'll shut up, they'll close, etc., etc. But we think we are covering all the, you know, consumer needs possible across different price points. So we definitely, I think, have more or less cracked that. In terms of extruded snacks, I think we still have some way to go, right? So that's why you see a 97%. It's a very small base also, right? So I won't get too carried away. I think I would just say, in total, for the bagged snacks category, we continue to have reasonable growth. This quarter is a little softer than last year, than the fourth quarter of last year. And the only reason for that is that the tortilla chips was at that point in time rocking prior to the fire at the factory. We are now therefore comparing against a higher base. You are likely to see changes in percentage growth rates within bag snacks. So 69, 97, the 69 could go up, the 97 could come down. But I think in total we are in the right ballpark. And as the base also of tortilla chips gets corrected, this will get a further momentum in it.
Yeah, so just one just link to this. Now there are a lot of quinoa snacks. Some people have started and that is high margin. So you had said in that investor meet that slowly from back snacks you are expecting to get into higher price points and higher value added products. So is that process on?
I'll have to be fair and respectful to everybody. So the rules of the game are all the questions you ask initially are answered. This one will go to the back of the queue, okay?
Okay.
So if you have to, we'll come back. Otherwise, I apologize, okay?
No problem.
I hope you don't mind, but just to
no,
be
no,
fair.
No, no,
okay,
Vaishnavi.
Yeah. Thank you, Vimal. Have a great day. Okay, Vaishnavi, over to you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chirag Patel from Bhavish Investment. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good afternoon, sir. My first question is regarding the A&P expense. Will it be around 7 to 8% of gross margin or gross profit for the complete year? The second question is regarding the administrative cost. What are we expecting it for the complete year? The third question is regarding the Dhaka plant that we have started. So what kind of revenue generation we are expecting from there? That would be all.
Okay, thank you, Chira. So, you know, on A&P expenses, we normally track it by as a percentage of revenue, not so much as a percentage of profit. So, you know, you can apply that backward, right? And we've always said that for a company like ours, a 7 to 8% A&P spend on revenue is a good figure. However, that contingent, and we've added always, is contingent on margin, right? The underlying base of this company is an edible oil business. Edible oil businesses are naturally volatile with ups and downs. So if you make the margin, we'd like to have 7 to 8%. But if we can't, we live with less than that, right? It could be 3 to 4%, I think, is there probably was, it's been last year. So, it's going to be a function of margin. However, I think we've also more or less cracked the art of how to manage with and continue to deliver robust growth in foods with even lower A&P expenses, right? So it's a question, it's a dilemma that we would have had some years ago saying, you know, if margin of oils comes under pressure, will we be able to, you know, sustain the foods growth rate because, you know, we now have less money to invest? The answer is we've actually done that, right? In the last 2 years, margin of oils came under pressure, but we've continued to maintain that steady or 15% growth in the foods business. This is, of course, cyclical, right? There will be years when oils will be under pressure. There will be years when it makes more money. And it's also, frankly, only a matter of time now. As we mentioned in our investor release, foods is now about 28% of the business. It's a matter of time before a third of our business gets to that level. I think it's going to happen in the current year. And we've also said that once we get into that 35 to 40% contribution from foods, then it really doesn't matter too much, right? So long as we just hold the edible oils margin, there's sufficient money at play within our P&L to be able to fund A&P, to be able to fund expenses, and to be able to deliver significant profit growth. In terms of administrative costs, I think you'll see by and large over the last few years, we are reasonably well controlled when it comes to administrative costs. Employee costs, I don't think, have changed significantly at all, right? This hasn't prevented us, obviously, from, you know, rewarding our employees by way of merit increases, but it's simply that the organization keeps becoming more and more productive, right? With the same wage bill, we are able to get more and more productivity and handle a more complex portfolio and be able to do many more things. So you can assume that, you know, we will continue to be very, very tight as far as administrative costs are concerned. I always say for anybody, if you want to predict what the next 5 years are going to be, you know, you might as well just look at the last, you know. So have a look at what those costs are and you'll get a reasonable idea. In terms of the Dhaka plant was set up actually not only to service Bangladesh, it was also set up as a contingency plan for India. As you know, all the popcorn that we consume is imported, and there was a time actually some years ago, several years ago, that we were very, very low on corn. We probably had a week's supply in our plants, right? And because, you know, it had gone into litigation, and there's several interests at play. So I would say the plant therefore is set up both to exploit the market in Bangladesh, which we will do in a gradual basis, right? Because we also have priorities and investments that we need to drive in India, but also to serve as a contingency plan in the event that we have some supply chains issues here. So the plant will be used to service Bangladesh. It will also be used to service some parts of India. And, you know, so long as it matches that and we have a reasonable presence, we are okay. So, sum total of it is, I don't think we should expect that in the next 1 or 2 years, Bangladesh will suddenly become a growth driver for the total company. We have sufficient ammunition to get all that growth that we need in India, right? While funding some amount of growth in Bangladesh and keeping this alternate supply chain open as far as we are concerned. Okay? All right. Thank you, Chirag. Vaishnavi, back to you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manoj Dua, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Gopalji. I have three questions. My first question is, now we are being out of GST in oil.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Dua. Sir, we are not able to hear you clearly.
Okay. Now I'm more audible?
Sir, can you use a handset mode while speaking?
More audible, ma'am?
Much better. Thank you.
Okay. So my first question is that we are now out of the GST ambit in the oil business. Can we be a little bit more predictable now in terms of oil margin that we can raise the price to protect the input cost? Second is about peanut butter spread that we grew 13%. Can we have some view on that going forward? And third is that now you have said that double-digit growth can be expected in ready-to-cook popcorn. I think if we are talking about shorter term or you are talking about longer term. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Manoj. Okay. So I think on the anti-profiteering, as you know, actually the term of the anti-profiteering authority has been extended by another 2 years, right? So I would say, you know, from a compliance perspective, we need to continue to be compliant. But as I had mentioned earlier, and I said this last quarter in the call, starting this quarter, we'll give you a perspective on oil GM because now the bases are all comparable, right? So it's certainly much more business as usual than it used to be, right? The disturbance that was caused, the lack of comparability, I think certainly all that is behind us, right? And that is one of the reasons why you can see also, you know, there was a 4-odd% growth in the edible oil gross margin. That number is only for the Sundrop edible gross oil gross margin picture, right? So certainly a lot more predictability, I think, and, you know, more a business as usual so that we can ensure that we, you know, kind of protect the oil's gross margin while continuing to build our strategic foods business, which is where all the moats of the company are. In terms of peanut butter, I think, or the spreads category, we continue to see this as a significant driver of growth for the company. It's also one where we have competitive advantage, because we have our own plant, right? And therefore have significant cost advantage over almost anybody else, right? So to give you an example, you know, we blow our own PET bottles for peanut butter. We intend to do the same thing as far as almond butter and other cashew or any other butter that we launch, or chocolate spreads for that matter. At the same time, we also do all our nut roasting ourselves. We don't buy nuts from roasted nuts from anywhere else, right? So, you know, whether it's almond, peanut, cashew, all of that, we do the roasting, or we will be doing the roasting ourselves. And ditto for chocolate, right? We don't buy chocolate from outside. We make it ourselves. So we see ourselves as having significant competitive advantage. If you're asking for, you know, where do we think as management we will be going on this, I would say last year, I think we ended up a spreads business, Arijit, it was about 51-odd crores, right? So it was in the region of 51 or 52 crores, right? That would be the range. I think we're going to end up somewhere between 60 and 70 crores this year, right? We ideally like a nice $10 million business there, right? Which will make us a fairly significant spreads player worldwide, right? I mean, from a spreads business. It'll be almost about 10-odd% of our U.S. business of spreads. It's starting to look like a good business. We've always said we're not gonna be happy with a 20-30 crore business. We needed to get close to 100-odd crores. I think if we get somewhere between 60 and 70 crores this year, then in the next year or two, we can certainly look forward to having a 100-odd crore business of spreads. Last is double-digit growth in ready-to-cook. We certainly will need, I mean, we need a guaranteed growth of double-digit in ready-to-cook, right? We would ideally like it to have be more in the range of 15%-20%. Somebody else asked the question of sustainability, and I think I answered that saying that, hey, you know, it's 12 here, interpret some caution on it, 150-200 basis points, probably double-digit is okay. It's gonna be beefed up, right? We're entering with sweet corn this year. We'll probably make one more market entry next year into the ready-to-cook portfolio. We'd like it to be growing in line with the, you know, the rest of the portfolio. It's a large part of our business, right? It's currently 50% of our business. If 50% of our business grows at 7% or 8% as it did last year, then it drops the growth rate. That's why we ended up with a 14%-15% growth rate, right? If we can bring this up into, you know, more the ready-to-cook portfolio per se, total, to in the region of 15%-20%, then it certainly guarantees us that our entire food business is north of 20% and getting into the 25% range. Okay? I hope that satisfies the question. Anything which is about forward is obviously a little more gray, but I hope that I did justice to it. Okay, Vaishnavi. Thank you, Manoj. Vaishnavi, over to you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Swati P from Zen Securities Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I have three questions. The first one is, with lot of consolidation happening in the, am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah. With lot of consolidation happening in the FMCG sector and considering companies like limited CapEx going forward and strong balance sheet, are we looking at any acquisition? That is my first one. Second, I just want some further clarification, I mean, some further view on this chocolate confectionery which you said. With even the bigger companies going sugar-free and all, how would be the scope in this segment going forward? Like, are we going with the healthy chocolate? I mean, I just want to know your view on it. The last one is about West Bengal plant. Are we going to spend anything this year on this, or we are focusing only on the other two plants, Unnao plant, and the Chittoor plant? Yeah, that's all.
Okay. Thank you, Swati. On the subject of acquisition, we are obviously always open to acquisitions, right? But you know, they must make sense for us, right? Frankly, we are also reaching a stage now where, if they are small acquisitions, they're not really gonna be too attractive for us, right? We are, you know, we've ended with a food business of 225 crores last year. It's gonna be in the high 200s this year, right? Whichever way you look at it, right? Today, if somebody comes with a business of, say, 20 crores, 30 crores, doesn't really make. I don't think it makes sense for us. It'll have to be, you know, significantly more than that for us to be able to invest our time and our effort, right? It'll have to be 100-200 crores or thereabouts, right? From a book perspective, there is no problem of affordability because we have a very strong book, right? There is also management effort that has to go into the management of the acquisition. That is also particularly, I would say, reinforced by the fact that we have a very strong internal product lineup, right? Now in which can deliver us growth. Normally what happens in the U.S., for example, is that most food companies choose the acquisition route, right? For a variety of reasons. One of them certainly is that if you already have a $20 billion business, how do you deliver organic growth on that $20 billion business? I'm not talking about our parent company, I'm talking about any food company in the U.S., right? It becomes challenging. The other is you also have a lot of small players who are agile, very agile, and sometimes can be more agile than a big company. Therefore, what happens or how it plays out is that the smaller players build up, they build up the business, and then the large person comes and buys them out, right? So it's a nice, it's a, inorganic is a reasonable formula for growth. It doesn't play out exactly like that in India, because most of the small players, frankly, are struggling today, right? There was a time about 3 years ago when we would have said, you know, private equity food firms are a major threat as far as big companies are concerned. I think that's fading, because with increased regulation, many other factors, and also bigger companies starting to become more agile, it's becoming more difficult, I think, for smaller players actually to scale up. We are seeing that in competitors across the different categories that we currently compete in. So long and short of it, we're open to acquisition. It must be accretive. It must be earnings accretive. It must make sense for us. Otherwise, we don't have a problem. We've got a strong formula for organic growth. If we continue to work on that, that's going to deliver us results. I repeat what I said earlier. We think that this portfolio, what we are going to have by, let's say, in the next 1 or 2 quarters, right, is going to be sufficient to get us to 500 crores. No question about it, right? Well, so that's a reasonable size business. In fact, we are already starting to think, okay, you know, what do we need to do by way of planning plants, etc., for 800 crores, right? But this portfolio is certainly adequate for this. In terms of chocolate confectionery, yes, I think health is an important consideration and frankly is a must-have. So for example, you've seen, I think, for example, Amul has done a very good job on dark chocolate in the last 12 to 18 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, sugar content is becoming relevant, right? When we do consumer testing of our own chocolates that we are currently making, which we have not yet launched, one of the things that comes out is they say, hey, you know what, you've got a lot less sugar than the competition. It's relevant. But that's not the reason why consumers are going to come to us. They won't come to us because we have less sugar than a leading alternate player in the current player in the market. They have to come to us for a reason, which is to do with our brand and where we have comparative advantage. And that's where it comes, that's where nuts play a role. Okay? So the fact that we have our own nut making capabilities, and we've set them up now in the Jhagadia plant, right? We have full nuts. We get the raw nut, we roast it, we blanch it, we do whatever, you know, crush it, everything, whatever we need to do. It's all in-house. So we have significant competitive advantage by way of cost, right? A lot of the chocolate players actually buy the nuts from outside, right? And I'm not going to take names, but at least two of the people who, the big players in the chocolate market, are buying peanuts from people who supply raw peanuts to us, but they are buying roasted peanuts from them, right? So there's a cost markup that is there. Second is, it's a very competitive market with a very high level of spending, right? We don't have that kind of money to take on these big people with so much money in their wallet. So we need to go where our brand has strength. And our brand has strength when it comes to nuts. 10 years ago, Sunrum was basically an edible oil brand, right? Today, it has a very large consumption base of peanut butter. Our peanut butter distribution is probably double of our oil distribution. In other words, the number of households today who know Sunrop as a nut brand or a peanut butter brand are far greater than the number who know it as an oils brand, right? Now, brands don't change in one day. They change years to spend, to change. But this is happening. It's happening, you know, it's quiet, it's slow, it's happening. So I think we've built up those equities with nut butters and nuts. That will be reinforced when we enter other nut butters, like say almond butter or cashew butter, right? So we will become a nut expert. At that point in time, we go to the consumer and say, by the way, you know what? Here is a chocolate which is, you know, around nuts. She'll say, yeah, you know, you have the credibility. You have the credibility to say, yeah, I think they make a much better nut chocolate than Nestle, a Cadbury, a Hershey's or a Mars or anyone else, right? So it's all about taking the brand one step at a time in a direction which is extremely profitable because you're competing in high margin categories. Okay, but your point is right. If it makes sense, should we do it with dark chocolate rather than milk chocolate? The answer is yes. If it makes sense for the ingredient that we're talking about, or if it makes sense, should we have less sugar rather than more sugar? Absolutely, the answer is yes. No question about it. Okay, on the plants, I would say. Yes, there's work going on obviously now from a reinsectment perspective in the Chittoor facility, but there's also work going on in other plants. We are growing a business, and we need plants to supply that need, right? So we are actually building more space in Jhagadia as we speak. We are just expanding our plant in Kothur because we are running out of shop floor space, warehousing space, right? At this point in time, the only plants that have excess space as of now are our plant near Guwahati and the plant in Dhaka, right? All the other plants, actually, work is underway, right? And we need to plan this out properly, right? I'm not sure, but I think the figure right now that we probably have across the country is about 260,000 sq ft of factory space, right? And we certainly, if we want to, you know, build an 800 crore business, we'll have to take this somewhere between 500,000-600,000 sq ft. So that planning will continue. But these are not such large CapExes, if you will, that, you know, they dramatically change our cash flow, but these are gradual and also very gradual investments that we continue to make. Okay, Swati, I hope I answered all your questions. Vaishnavi, I don't know if we have time for a last question or not. Whatever your call. Yeah.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, anyone wishing to ask a question, may please press star and one. Sir, we have the next question from the line of Vivek Ganguly from Nine Rivers Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. This is Vivek here. Sir, historically, you know, the way we have understood the business will evolve is that your snacks and food category, it will grow, and it will grow profitably, and your oil business will continue at sustainable pace and decline if it is not profitable. So, you know, while your food category is growing and your oil is contracting, what confounds us is kind of that the profitability is also not growing hand in hand, because we believe that your food business, your snacking food business, is much more profitable than your oil business. How do we address this? Is it that the oil business is actually declining, the profitability is declining exponentially, and that is why it is offsetting the profitability of the food business?
Okay. Vivek, any other question, or that's the only one?
Yes, that's all. That's the only one.
That's all? Okay, good. Okay, thank you. So I think the answer to your question is, what you said at the end is certainly true for last year. Last year, our food business continued to grow. It grew profitably. We added a profitability, but our edible oil business did come under gross margin compression. No question about it, right? So it had an offset, and that is why actually, if you see, our advertising expenses were lower. If you look at the current quarter, that's not the case, right? In the current quarter, the oil margin has improved, right? Perhaps it would have remained flat, right? We'll see how the year goes by, right? But the foods business continues to grow. So really, it's all about, I think, the focus. Our focus is grow the foods business as fast as we can, right? And that will deliver profit. So let me tell you how the algorithm is in our mind, right? And then you'll obviously have your own interpretation and take on that. So let's say we had a 225 crore business last year, and we expect this year that it should be somewhere in the 280-300 crore range. So take a figure of 300 crores, and you say if a 300 crore business grows at 20%, because that's the other critical part of the algorithm, the growth rate should be in the region of 20+. You build up a 60 crore incremental food business, right?
Right.
The food business is already north of 25% in terms of gross margin. As you get more scale, you're certainly going to get more operating leverage. So let's say you take a 28% gross margin on the 60 odd crores incremental that you got. That'll give you 17, 18 crores, right? Now, that's the money that you have either to deploy behind A&P or to meet SG&A requirements or to feed into your profit before tax. But now, 17, 18 crores is a reasonable amount, assuming the oil piece holds, okay? Because last year's profit before tax was probably 52 crores or something like that, I think, right? So it's a very large amount. So the play or the algorithm is very clear. Just relentlessly drive the food business, hold the Sunrock oils margin business, and the amount of profit that will actually drop into the P&L will surprise us at a point in time, right? Now, the critical thing is, therefore, in this algorithm is, get that growth rate up from 15 to 20, and continue to do profitable things as far as the food business is concerned, okay? If this happens, that inflection point will certainly come. Somebody asked me yesterday in the AGM when. I said, you know, it can happen anytime, but, you know, the sooner the better, okay? All right, Vivek, thank you, Vivek, for your question.
Can I have a follow-up question on that?
No, correct. Rural again are clear. Now, actually, I have to go back to this gentleman who asked about quinoa snacks, right? So, I think I still have 30 seconds. So, I have to be fair to him. So, Vimal, yes, the answer is, we have said that we don't only want to play in the low-price snacks or a low-margin snack. And I think we want to do more profitable things with the extruded investments that we made. And that is where actually the cereals plays a role. So, Pops, which is actually launched, right, it leverages the extruded capabilities that we have. And that is also one way of leveraging it, which we are currently in the process of doing. Okay. So I apologize, Vivek, if I had to, you know, continue. And Vimal, I hope that answered your question, and rest will be back to you. Thank you very much, guys. Have a great day. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.